This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration prepares professionals to address today's most pressing challenges and offers flexible options with part-time and evening classes to support busy adults balancing complex schedules. Inspire change, shape the future at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Poetry Foundation, with a reminder that Chicago is the pulse of poetry. Visit the Poetry Foundation on the corner of Superior and Dearborn to explore their library of 40,000 books, attend public events, and view Frente a la Vida, Facing Life, a striking multidisciplinary art exhibition by Chicago artist Victoria Martinez. Learn more at poetryfoundation.org.
Citizen scientists are helping map extreme heat. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. Practically every part of the country has been affected by the extreme heat waves the last couple of months. It's forced us to stay indoors, find ways to try to stay cool, and take extra precautions for folks like the elderly, who are especially susceptible to extreme heat. It's also taught us how critical it is to know where surface temperatures are hottest so that we can effectively respond to rising heat. But to do that, we need a heat map. Fortunately for us, dozens of citizen scientists here in Chicago are stepping up to do just that. They've been mapping temperatures and humidity levels in neighborhoods across the city as part of a collaboration with a National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration program that trains residents to map heat inequities. To find out more, we spoke to Dulce Garduño, a volunteer with the Heat Watch 2023 project, and Kyra Woods, project manager for Chicago's Office of Climate and Environmental Equity and an organizer for the Heat Watch project. We're also joined by Reset sustainability contributor Karen Weigert. She's the director of Loyola University Chicago's Baumart Center for Social Enterprise and Responsibility. And she explained first where we currently get information on temperature in Chicago.
Chicago, as we know, is very large. It's highly varied, and typically what you'll get is one number for the whole city. Now, there are sensors. You can look up, for example, the temperature at different beaches, and you can go through a little extra effort to try to find a little more information. There are some sensors and temperature gauges out there, but normally you'll get an answer for the full city, and that's not really a helpful answer for everyone all the time.
Yeah. Why does the temperature vary throughout the city, to your point?
The temperature varies for a lot of reasons. And a big part of that is how the city is built. What's there? So the sun is out, it's lovely, the heat comes down. What happens to it? Well, with dark surfaces, pavement, buildings, that heat gets absorbed. And those buildings and those surfaces can then radiate it out. So those areas will just be hotter. And they'll be hotter both during the day when the sun is out, and they'll be hotter at night. That's the big picture urban heat island effect, in a sense. But then also there are spots where you might have shade and you might not. Well, that's a big difference in what you're going to experience as a person. So the way you feel is probably that air temperature combined then with humidity to get the heat index. You hear that a lot. That's how you as a human will experience it, because when your body's trying to cool off, you'll perspire, but that is supposed to lead to evaporation.
Right.
When it's really humid, it doesn't work the same, so you feel hotter.
Dulce, let's bring you in here. What made you want to participate in this and measure heat in Little Village?
Well, I've been listening how all the work, like, being behind. And this is a very good experience for me and for my son. We're trying to be together. Into the end, we couldn't. But it was amazing to be part of this initiative.
What was the best part of it?
Well, spent a time together with the other persons, like we never know, and going to all the streets, like, while it was amazing the first time to be in the sites, like, never was thinking it's the super concrete parts, like, you know, checking, like, this is concrete, this is not learn. How more important it's having trees around to the city, how important it's to trying to get more trees in the city close to these space full with concrete and metals and all these things, you know?
Yeah, sounds like a great learning experience. And Kyra, how did this collaboration with NOAA actually come to be?
Sure. So Chicago was actually one of 18 cities or communities that was a part of the cohort with Heat Watch. And I do say communities because actually there were some counties that were involved as well. But this is a program that's been around since 2017. And NOAA actually works with another organization and national consultant, Kappa Strategies, to support those community areas in developing community-led urban heat island mapping campaigns. And so we applied earlier this year and were announced to be a part of the 2023 cohort. And we saw it at the city as a really great opportunity to ensure community participation in this broader conversation, as Dulce mentioned, that's really gripping the world. And so the active data collection and that science, that scientist mindset is something that Chicagoans have in us. We are many times a part of different efforts, but we really wanted to ensure that the conversation around urban heat islands could be hyper-local and not just using satellite imagery or data that really averages and aggregates information as the full city.
And so
having that direct participation from residents was fantastic.
So we're crystal clear. What exactly were you measuring?
Sure, that's a great question. So volunteers were given a sensor that would be mounted on their car to measure humidity and temperature specifically. And those two metrics allow us to get a good sense of what the heat actually feels like, that heat index. So not just what the thermometer reads, but these other elements like humidity or even airflow impact what it feels like. So the sensor measures temperature, humidity, location, and time as well. As a part of the activation, we had three separate shifts throughout the day, morning, afternoon, and evening, because we know that not just with the setting and the rising of the sun does the temperature change, but also some of those other elements related to land use that Karen and Dulce mentioned can impact what the actual temperature feels like or what it feels like in the air.
Yeah, Karen, I'll get you to piggyback off that and give us sort of a complete understanding here of heat. You know, when we talk about surface temperature, humidity, mercury, and also put it in context of climate change, right? I mean, it seems like there's a bit of a cycle here.
There can be. And certainly when we're talking about the urban heat island and this idea of these human-built surfaces retaining heat and making parts of our world hotter, cities tend to be hotter because of this. And then parts within cities can be hotter still. And that's what's so interesting about this work, both that it engaged residents in sense to think about what parts of the city might be hot and then to actually capture the data. But we'll get interesting information in a few months, but it will provide a finer point into which parts of the city are hotter and which parts are less hot.
Yeah.
And in the big picture, when you're hot, the best thing you can do is be in a place that's cool, and that is typically air conditioning. And so the long-term big picture global cycle is the world is increasingly becoming hot. There's also a lot of population growth in places globally that are hot. Well, to be safe, people will need some air conditioning. And if that air conditioning is powered by fossil fuels, you're then creating more carbon dioxide, which can exacerbate the climate challenge.
Yeah, so air conditioning, which isn't always great for the environment.
Yeah, so there can be a big behind-the-scenes challenge, which is why it's so important to really understand what we can do now to make sure that our residents are cool. There are lots of different strategies. Air conditioning is absolutely going to play a part here. And then long term, we've got to make sure that air conditioning is not powered by fossil, that it's powered renewably.
Dulce, I understand that you have also been part of planning this project. So tell us what kind of feedback you gave the city about what parts of your community needed to be mapped.
This is the hard part because we have just some time. And we want to spend a lot of time in the specific areas, but we trying to do the best. And for us, was an amazing job. And I think so. We cover everything or almost everything. And I've been working in Pilsen, and Pilsen had the this festival last weekend, so it was
yes.
A little tricky part, like we being afraid, but into the end, everything was amazing.
Kyra, can you jump in here and just talk about how you incorporated feedback from communities like Pilsen in developing the routes to be measured?
Sure. So Dulce's example of the festival is actually a really great example of direct community feedback that was helpful for designing the routes. We initially opened a website to the general public to populate a map of Chicago with places where people wanted us to measure, mm-hmm. where they could name the places they wanted us to measure. And that could be a cool place in the neighborhood or a hotter place. And people were even able to leave descriptions of why they thought it was impactful. So after crowdsourcing these various pinpoints, we were able to share that with our consulting team and, you know, share it with the other communities that were a part of the cohort. And the Kappa Strategies took those various pins and then developed 29 routes that covered the entire city. And so from those pins, we got the routes, and then we brought those routes as campaign organizers back to our community partners that were assisting in the planning to say, okay, did we get it right? Does this route go by those pockets in your community that you think are very important, whether it's because there's high industry activity or maybe there's a very big park that you know youth gather at and that is the place where people go to stay cool, or there's a splash pad. So we wanted to be able to show both warm places mm-hmm. and cool places so that we could have that that difference be very visible on our final map. And so tying it back to the festival, we didn't know exactly what date we were going to choose for the actual measuring. So there's this moving target that was difficult. And so that feedback that, you know, Dulce and other residents could directly provide us to say, if we were to do this on this weekend, we'll need to reroute because we won't be able to go down that street because it's blocked off. It was that type of granularity that was very helpful. And we weren't able to get all of the things knocked out. And that's where volunteers had to, you know, think autonomously and independently to navigate on the day of. But having that input from the very beginning allowed us to ensure that we did our best, at least, to measure places across a single community that were both warm and cool, as well as to take into consideration we only had an hour long mm-hmm. for volunteers to navigate those routes for each shift. So we wanted to cover some good territory each time.
Yeah, and you were waiting for a day that was above 86 degrees, too, right, to be
That's
able to
correct.
Launch the program. So a lot of things. You had to measure on a day without a lot of cloud coverage. Why was that?
Well, ultimately, when you have a clear, sunny day, that sun can really be felt, and the heat that's emanating from that can be felt, versus if you have cloud coverage where it would be cooler. I think another variable that we didn't anticipate during the springtime that became really critical and challenging to anticipate was the smoke from the wildfires in Canada. And so while there weren't clouds on some days, on the days where we did have excessive smoke coverage, that also artificially cooled the day. And so cloud coverage was a concern, the actual temperature crossing that 86 degree threshold. And then also we needed a low chance of precipitation. And so we have been playing this very delicate game summer was really wet, right? So there were some days that we crossed 86 degrees, but there was a 70% chance of a thunderstorm, and it happened. And so we were kind of gambling last week, but we picked a great day. Mm-hmm. We had a thunderstorm in the morning, and those volunteers who showed up for that first shift at 5:30, we were all in a holding pattern. Some people had gone out to the beginning parts of their routes, and we're just kind of waiting for the rain to pass.
Wow.
Some stayed at their volunteer hub waiting for the green light. It all got done. So thank you to the volunteers who waited those few hours so that we could get data for that first shift.
You were smiling throughout that description.
Oh, yeah. This product is incredibly cool, to throw that word out there. And President, it's so important is there is a decent amount of high level information about different parts of this city and other cities having temperature variations. There have been studies that have mapped it back to historic redlining, where communities have been disinvested in for generations. And the residents now reflect demographic diversity, where you have black and brown communities typically in places or more likely to be in places that have less tree cover and that actually are hotter generally. This project, though, is getting really, really specific. Mm-hmm. Residents got to say which parts of their community they wanted data on. Residents actually are driving the routes. and they're actually helping to gather this data, and it's going to be hyper local. So we can take some of those higher level conversations and get really specific on what parts of the city really are hotter, and then you can be concrete about what you can do in terms of possible interventions and solutions. But you also do it in a backdrop where a lot of your residents are engaged. You know, when Kyra's talking about rain in the morning, when we were catching up beforehand, she was talking about the many of the volunteers got to hang out and get to know each other. Mm-hmm. So you're building a whole collection of people who are engaged in this, and they're going to create the real data that can help
solutions. And Dulce mentioned that too, that was one of the best parts is gathering with folks that she had never talked to before. You know, NOAA is going to be crunching the data that was collected in Chicago along with other participating cities. I hear we should have results back in the fall. I mean, what do you hope, Dulce, that the data is used for to address the needs in your community?
For beginning to change the bad things. You know, we have with the tech, the critical things. So we need to plant in trees. We need to change the ecosystem for be more natural. And this is the right way for building better communities.
The data, Kyra, could it be used to sort of change the way our emergency response is right now when it comes to dangerous heat conditions?
We can have both a very hyper-local conversation, you know, and I think I know that those are already afoot. And after Heat Watch and the campaign day last Friday, I think the conversation continues to pick up speed. But also we can think about as a city, as a partner to other levels of government, as a partner to other agencies like FEMA or the Red Cross, how can we really either better tailor our tools for community or reevaluate so that we are equipped with very clear community-inspired or community-led interventions that can work in parallel with those existing structures and systems that we have.
Some might say, oh, this was just one day. How, you know, how telling is this data going to be? What do you say to that?
I think that's a fair critique, I've heard it all this summer. It is a snapshot, but that's okay, right? That this is a conversation starter. It is an awareness-building opportunity. You know, so much starts when people get together and have an opportunity to talk about the similarities and differences between their communities, or the similarities and differences from their community when they were a young person versus now as they raise their family.
Yeah.
I think this is an evolving conversation as we talk about the types of interventions. We've had some fantastic lessons learned, unfortunately, due to the tragedy of our heat wave in 1995.
Yeah.
And many cities looked to Chicago after we developed our emergency operation plans and a task force to be ready for the next extreme weather event. But now it's 2023, and there's an opportunity to say, hey, are these strategies still working? Are residents taking advantage of them? And where there are gaps, how can we show up to meet the moment in 2023, given the backdrop of climate change, as well as the different ways that we stay connected as community? Those strategies look different than they were in 1995 versus now, or even pre-COVID alone.
Karen, leave us with this. I mean, how does this fit into other kinds of measurement that we know that are happening in Chicago, like, and the wealth of citizen science opportunities that there are in this city and beyond?
Yeah, I think this is a great example of residents being able to shape not just the solutions that will come, but the data that will drive those solutions. And we've seen huge growth in opportunities for residents and citizens to be involved in tracking different parts of nature, to being involved in global studies. Mm-hmm. What's particularly important about this is really, really local, but it's linked to this national program that NOAA is running. So our residents here in Chicago are going to shape the data that can inform not just Chicago, but it can inform the nation.
That is Karen Weigert, Reset Sustainability Contributor, Kyra Woods, Project Manager for the Office of Climate and Environmental Equity, and an organizer for the Heat Watch Project, and volunteer Dulce Garduño. Thank you all. This episode of Reset was produced by Linnea Dominic, and it was edited by Andrew Merriweather and Dan Tucker. Hear sustainability stories like this and much more by subscribing to our podcast. We share episodes every morning and afternoon, Monday through Friday, with a bonus episode on Saturdays. That'll do it for this morning. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Talk to you this afternoon.